Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Villa Talks podcast, another episode of the pre-match social. I'm back with our regular crew from the VVB football crew. We've got Ajo, our Stato King. We've got Carl, our very own Mark Lawrenson with his predictions. And we've got Sam, our shock jock, ready to give his opinion on absolutely everything. Welcome, boys. How you doing?
Good, thanks, mate.
Yeah, good, thanks, mate.
How's your week been?
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Monday and Tuesday off, so yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, it's been quite quick, hasn't it? 4 day week. Yeah.
Three for me, mate.
Well, yeah.
AJ's got next week off as well. He tells us so.
Yeah, 3 day week and then a week off.
Nice.
Can't complain.
All right for some, eh? I hate when people say that. All right for some, like you're not using up your holiday allowance or whatever it
is. You know.
We all get the same, mate. You know, calm down. But anyway, we're back. As you can see, we're in good moods, good spirits after 3 points of the weekend against Fulham. We'll touch on that match a little bit because I want to hear the thoughts of the boys because, like we said in the last pod with Chadzy and Jugsy, it was a very weird match. I'm not really sure what to make of it. But mainly focused on the game against Liverpool, which is coming up on Saturday at 3 o'clock. Of course, we'll talk about the 7-2 and probably the whole episode will probably be centered around that. But we've, of course, got stats galore, thanks to AJ. He's done his homework. So we'll look forward to that and sort of build the episode around that if we can. Get Carl's predictions, as always. More importantly, I got a complaint last time, Carl, that you didn't tell us who you're predicting as goal scorers for your 27-0. So we need to hear that this time around, please. And make sure...
Well, that's if he predicts 27-0, Omar. We don't know what the prediction's going to be.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. We could be in for a surprise. Tune in.
I mean, this isn't sort of a running joke. This is actually what I think the score's going to be in each game. It's just I've been wrong a few times.
Weirdly enough, this reverse fixture was probably the closest you've got, isn't it? So we'll wait and see what you say then. And of course, we'll talk about some memories as well about previous Liverpool games. I personally don't have many fond memories of the Liverpool games. I don't think I've ever seen us beat Liverpool, but we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about Liverpool style of play, what we think the result's going to be, how we think Villa should approach the game. Talk about the substitutions on the game against Fulham and whether they will make an impact going forward and how the team will change now based on that result. So let's get straight into it. AJ, as always, we'll come to you first, mate, and get your thoughts on sort of Liverpool. A bit of an interesting season for them. Some say they're hitting form now because obviously they win against Arsenal, but then their performance in Champions League wasn't too great. What have you made of them this season and sort of what are the stats to back up how poor they've been?
Yeah, well, it's a funny old crisis, isn't it, when you're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League and you're, you know, still comfortably placed in the league. But that's the situation with the sort of so-called big six, I guess. As soon as they're not winning every single game, they're suddenly in crisis. But their form recently especially has been pretty poor, and in particular at home, which there's been a lot of talk about, so listeners are probably familiar with, but they've lost their last six home games, not even scored in their last three games at home, and only scored three in their last eight at home. So they really are struggling to score goals at home, although it's worth noting that their combined expected goals in those games has been 10.6. So they have been creating chances in those games. They just haven't been putting them away. So they're massively underperformed XG in those home games. But perhaps their kind of underlying form isn't as bad as their actual results suggest. But even if you go a bit broader and you don't just look at their home games, I mean, we've been talking a lot on the pod, especially you guys in the review show after the games, about our poor form and how much do we worry about that and so on. If you take the last 16 games, they've only won four of their last 16 games, and they've only taken 18 points. So that's 18 points from a possible 48. If you look at us over that same period, we've taken 19 points and we've managed five wins. So actually, like across that I mean, I've taken a slightly arbitrary period there, but if you look at that sort of run of four, where we've sort of, since the turn of the year, where we've been a bit down about the way we've been playing, Liverpool have actually been worse in that spell. And when you look at the players they've got at their disposal, the money they've spent, and of course the fact that they were champions last year, and you can see why there is a little bit of concern about that amongst Liverpool fans. You mentioned this though, Omar, they have actually won their last two Premier League games against Wolves and Arsenal. But on the other hand, we've taken 10 points off our four games with those two this year. So beating those two is not the same as it would have been over the last couple of seasons, and certainly over the last decade for Arsenal. I did have a cheeky look at, because you mentioned obviously that we're sort of the meat in the Real Madrid sandwich between their two legs of the Champions League tie. And often there's a lot of talk about teams struggling off the back of Champions League games, but actually they've been quite good this year. So they've averaged 1.9 points per game after Champions League ties, which is higher than their overall season average of 1.6. But I don't think we should ignore that, some of those group games that they've won after are not as tough as going to Real Madrid and getting fairly comprehensively outplayed. And then having to keep in mind that they've got to go to Madrid next week again as well. So it'd be interesting to see what sort of team they play. To a degree, the league is, they're certainly not going to win the league now. I guess they've still got fourth place to play for, which is important for them. But their season sort of rests on the Champions League, really. So are they going to be more worried about that in terms of selection than they are the game against us? So yeah, the form's not great.
Yeah, thanks, AJ. Yeah, I mean, two sides really out of form by the sounds of it. Both us and them. And that's quite an interesting stat, actually. I didn't realise that over a 16-game period, which is still a significant amount of, a significant period of time to look at, look at a segment of our games and see how well we've done compared to Liverpool. Very similar in terms of form. And I think most teams apart from Man City really have had bad patches of form. Possibly even West Ham are probably the only other ones who seem to be winning every week or doing well most weeks. Carl, what do you think, it's a good time to play Liverpool? Or do you think it doesn't matter given how poor our form has been, regardless of our recent result against Fulham?
I'd have probably said it was a good time to play them a couple of games ago, particularly at Anfield, although their home form remains poor. I think if Grealish was starting... I mean, it's a bit boring talking about this, isn't it? If Grealish was starting, I'd think that we would be able to give them a really good game. Without him, I don't fancy our chances. Fabinho is back, and he was excellent against Arsenal, and he's likely to run that midfield on Saturday. But, there are certain changes that I think I'd make if Grealish isn't back on Saturday. And what essentially results in us playing pretty much what we finished the game, the last game off with. But is it a good time to play them? They've got quality all over the pitch still. I think they're going to play a very strong side. I think they're going to have to. They can't put all their eggs in the winning the Champions League basket, and they want to be in the Champions League next year. And that, looking at the table, that's by no means guaranteed as it stands. So I think we'll see a very strong team. But I mean, even if they drop a few players, the quality they've got on the bench is more than enough to worry us. So I suppose that was a long way of saying, no, I don't think it's a good time to play them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I possibly agree with that. I probably agree with that. Fabinho coming back in midfield, I think is, I mean, yes, they lost against Real Madrid, but I do think they'd look better with Fabinho in that midfield position now, shoring up the midfield and helping the defence out. And the defence is a bit somewhat protected now where it wasn't before. A player that they've signed, Sam, in midfield, Thiago, come in with a lot of fanfare, obviously impressed for Bayern Munich. Most fans were thinking, why the hell do Barcelona let him go? And he's come to Liverpool and really struggled somewhat, struggled to adapt to the physicality of the Premier League and the pace of the Premier League. And, you know, obviously bags of quality, but do you think that's a potential weak area for them if potentially Fabinho does drop out and they rest him?
Yeah, look, I'm old enough to remember a certain Juan Sebastian Verón. And, you know, Man United won the treble and they bought this kind of, you know, Rolls Royce of a midfielder, you know, someone who's elevate their class, you know, stroke the ball around the park, a player perhaps too good for the kind of Premier League in many ways. And I think that with Alcantara, that they've brought in this kind of player who's supposed to be the, you know, the last piece in the jigsaw, really take their football onto another level. And I think actually all he's done is slowed their game down, that their intensity has dropped off. And I think at times you're watching them thinking, you know, it's all very well having this lad in the team, but you can't get him on the ball because you're not winning the ball back as often and as high up as you were winning it when you had, you know, maybe Milner's probably a season too far gone now, but, you know, Henderson or what have you. So, you know, I'm prepared to see a lot of egg on my face on Saturday when he runs the show and, you know, three assists, two goals, whatever. But, you know, I think that he's part of the reason why they've dropped off a little bit. You know, and I think that I agree with Carl. I think that we should start the game on Saturday with the team that we finish with. And, you know, we can get at them. I think that Keenan will cause their centre-halves a bit of bother. They won't like the kind of aggression that he's likely to bring. I'd like to think that Trezeguet will be galvanised and will be harrying and looking to press hard and win the ball high up the pitch for us. And I'm not too pessimistic. You know, I think that we've got a chance of going there and getting something, particularly as, and I keep banging this drum, you know, our defence is really excellent. And whilst they have got attacking talent, they don't play against a back five as cohesive, well-drilled and in such good form as ours. So I've got a sneaking suspicion we can go there and get something. And I'm not particularly worried about Mr. Rolls-Royce in midfield.
Interesting comments there. Thanks, Sam. AJ, your thoughts on the, Sam alluded to there, the front three and obviously how dangerous they are. Obviously, they've all been in, well, bad patches of form throughout the season at various different points of the season. Probably only Salah has been Mr. Consistent and probably head and shoulders above the others. But Diego Jota's come back in the side now and obviously made an impact when he first signed for Liverpool, got injured, has come back and scored again and impacted games. What have you made of their front three and who do you think some of their key players are and that we should look out?
Yeah, so on the key players front, fortunately, Omar, you've just called out all the ones I've looked at there, so it's great news for me, it's worked out well. but yeah, there has been a lot of talk about their underperforming front three, and it's interesting when you look at it in more detail. If you look on who scored, you know, and there's pros and cons of their ratings, but actually that front three of Mane, Salah and Firmino are still their top three rated players on there. So if you look at that as a kind of overall rating of their performance, it's not like they've been poor. They just haven't been as excellent as they were last season. I mean, if you look at Salah, he's still second in the league in terms of goals with 18 behind Harry Kane, who we talked a couple of weeks ago about how phenomenal his stats were ahead of the Spurs game. 6 of those goals are pens. So, you know, he's actually only 2 goals better off than Ollie Watkins in terms of non-penalty goals. But still, you know, 18 goals on the season. He only scored 19 goals last season. So he's actually on pace to score more goals this season than he did last year. Between the three of them, they've got 31 goals. Firmino, if you look at his sort of goals per game, he's never been like he's more of the link-up man, isn't he? He's never been scoring loads and loads of goals. And actually, again, if you look at his goals per game, they're more or less the same, around about 0.25 goals a game, something like that. The real difference for them is Mane, who last season was hitting 0.59 goals per game and ended the season with 15 or something like that, I think. But this season, he's only putting away 0.28 goals per game. So pretty much half or even slightly less than half of what he was delivering for the team last season. But we'll talk about their style of play in a little while. But Mane remains key to that high press that they play with, and one of the reasons why, you know, a lot of the analysts suggested we battered them to the extent we did in the first game was that Mane was missing. They didn't have that high press, and we were able to play over the top of their high line without any pressure on our midfielders, which you saw a little bit of even with Mane in the Real Madrid game in the week, actually. So Mane is virtually undroppable for them when he's fit, even if he's not scoring as many goals. And so that's the challenge for them with that front three is, you know, Salah's still delivering goals. Firmino has been in and out the side, but actually on a goals per game basis is doing pretty well, or at least as well as he has done in previous seasons. And the problem is that Mane is not scoring anywhere near enough goals, but they can't drop him because of what he contributes overall to the team. Then you mentioned Jota. Well, he's got 8 goals from 7 starts. So actually, his goal scoring on a goals per game basis or a goals per 90 basis is 0.98. So he's actually the most prolific out of any of those front players that they've got at their disposal. But he hasn't contributed anything in terms of assists. So the other guys are all chipping in with assists as well, helping each other out. He's got those 8 goals and not really contributed anything else. And the interesting thing is he's got those 8 goals from an XG of just under 5. So that sort of goes to show he's been scoring some pretty impressive goals, which you would have seen if you've been watching them on Match of the Day or whatever throughout the season. He has scored some great goals. But that sort of return is probably not sustainable on that level of expected goals. He's got to be getting into better positions if he's going to continue to score that amount of goals. So I think on the one hand, the struggles of their front three have been overstated a little bit, but on the other hand, they do have a challenge, particularly around Mane not contributing as much as he has in previous seasons, but him being undroppable for them for other reasons.
Yeah, no, spot on. I think that point around the press is so important. And, you know, Mane does press so well. He's relentless, isn't he? He really is such an important player for them. And he links up so well with Robertson as well on the left-hand side. And a lot comes through that position. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how they link up. And their fullbacks really have been, it's been a problem position for them, weirdly, this season for Liverpool. You know, there's such a strength for them usually with Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. Teams have exploited that position as they get forward, and we saw that with the 7-2 win early this season, where, you know, we really did a number on them because, you know, as AJ mentioned, we were allowed to sort of get that ball over the top behind the fullbacks and expose them. And obviously Liverpool that day did try and play a really high line, which was stupid really against Ollie Watkins. Obviously they sort of underestimated his abilities, but it'd be interesting to see how Klopp will adapt now against Villa, because, you know, he's probably would have learned his lesson. Klopp's one of the best coaches in the world. So, I mean, how do you think Klopp will approach that game, Carl? Do you think he will? I mean, is it difficult with, you know, we don't know if Jack's going to be in or out. Probably he's going to be out. Or do you think Klopp's just one of the view that actually Liverpool are good enough to beat Villa, so just play to their strengths and they should be good enough?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily because he's going to be playing us it's changed. He's already kind of changed. He doesn't play such a high line anymore. They still play a high line, but I mean, I remember the commentator saying, how hasn't he learned during this game to stop it? Like, why hasn't he already stopped it now? Which I suppose to become as successful as he's been, you have to have belief in what you know and what you do well. But I think, when our 5th goal went in, he had to start to consider changing it. But to be fair, I think they have changed it now. Not massively, but they don't play such a high line. The fullbacks still get forward a lot. So I think anything that we could, any threat that we have could be catching them so far forward, which is why Jack playing would be such a boost. But, you know, I can't see that happening. But I mean, he's got to believe that they have enough to beat us. I just hope that he's proven wrong on Saturday.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Oh, it's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, we did play well against them without Jack last year. Let's not forget. Trezeguet Ghazi did a great job on the wings that day. Really worked hard against Trent and Robertson and did a job. And, you know, we almost came away with a win or a draw. So, yeah, I guess we'll see. You know, obviously, we've got a bit of confidence after the win against Fulham. But it was a weird game, wasn't it, Sam, that game against Fulham? For 70-odd minutes, it seemed like it was the same old story for the last sort of 8 or 9 games where Villa looked completely toothless, looked like they had no ideas, played a very leisurely pace, almost like it was a dead rubber. And then suddenly Trezeguet comes on, Davis comes on, Ramsey comes on, and they spark something into Villa and we score 3 goals in 9 minutes. What's your mood like now with regards to Villa and the team now without Jack? Do you think that's a bit of a turning point? Do you think it's papering over the cracks? Do you think there's still concerns there? How do you see it?
Fair question. I think that it was a poor 70-odd minutes, wasn't it, on Sunday? And it wasn't an easy watch for any of us. And I've said before, and you know, the most frustrating thing about it is the swash and buckle of the 7-2 and then, you know, subsequent games. And then just seeing us so limp and listless as we were on Sunday for 70 minutes. But I do think that, you know, I've been on record on here and said that I didn't think Keenan was up to standard. But, you know, he came on and his aggression, just his willingness to mix it, just gave us something different. And so that and obviously Trezeguet's effervescence when he came in. And at times you watch his effervescence and you think that there's a sort of headless chicken aspect to it. But, you know, what did he have? 4 attempts when he came on? 5 attempts when he came on in that short amount of time and he was winning the ball. So if he's hungry for it, you know, I fancy that, especially if they've got one eye on the European game, you know, who knows what might happen. You know, in terms of my general mood about Villa now, you know, we all know the elephant in the room, obviously, is that what's happening with Jack, we don't really know. We all wanted to see him back in a Villa shirt dictating games and carrying the attacking threat and galvanising us. But if it doesn't happen, you know, the rest of the lads have got to step up. And maybe, just maybe, in the last 30 minutes of the game against Fulham, we saw a few players, unlikely candidates, granted, coming on and wanting to take the game by the scruff of the neck. And I think that's, you know, that's cheered me up a little bit. And I'm looking for a bit more of that on Sunday. Saturday, even, sorry.
Yeah. Weird. Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff. It's unusual. Mm. Yeah, didn't expect that. I actually thought it was a mistake. I thought they haven't changed it for the TV game, but apparently, yeah, it's 3 o'clock.
I just wonder, Omar, question for you. Do you think we would have won the game if we'd have got the penalty and scored the penalty?
Yeah, I think we would have. I think we would have seen the game out comfortably. I mean, you know, Tyron made a mistake, but I think if we're 1-0 up, he's probably just clearing his lines, I think, playing probably a bit safer. But, you know, we would probably got a bit of confidence from that penalty and probably gone on to score another, maybe, I think. Because it was almost like we needed a goal to spark us into something.
I don't think we'd have won the game had they not scored.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think it would have finished 0-0. I think them scoring really sort of spurred us on. I think it would have just been a boring 0-0 draw if they hadn't scored.
Yeah, no, I hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird one, wasn't it? Because we haven't come back from a losing position to win a game this season until the Fulham game. So that was the last thing I expected. As soon as they scored, you know, I think most fans were like, well, that's it. Another defeat. At best, maybe a draw if we managed to sneak one at the end. But it didn't look like we were going to score. We didn't really have any clear attempts. And, you know, I was still gutted from the penalty because I still think it's a penalty. I still think it now. But I thought that was our only chance. So, I mean, when Trez came on, I don't know what you guys were thinking, but I was thinking, well, it's not going to do anything, is he? He never does anything from the south.
Yeah,
bench.
Completely agree. I the last thing I was expecting was him to come on, have 4 shots and completely change the game.
I nearly turned off after his header that hit the corner flag, I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Oh, God, that was terrible, wasn't it? I was thinking typical Trez. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I think Keenan Davis, though, I want to talk about him quickly. you know, we've championed him on a lot of the pod shows that, you know, we think he should be involved in games more. He should be coming on earlier. Why aren't we going 4-4-2? Why isn't he playing alongside Ollie? You know, Keenan Davis has his limitations. We've all talked about it. Whether he's up to the standard, I don't know. But as an impact player, you know, he has made an impact on occasions. But I do think he does make things happen. You know, he's physical, he's determined, he works hard. And sometimes in the Premier League, that does make a difference. So, I mean, AJ, do you think he deserves a start now? Or do you think he's better coming off the bench?
Well, I definitely think he should have been coming off the bench sooner in a lot of games. And it's been discussed on the pod several times around Smith's ability to impact the game from the bench. And is that because of the limitations of the players? But I think, yeah, the squad's limited, but you've got to give them a chance to have an impact. And there was a stat doing the rounds on Twitter just before the game around the impact of substitutes. And we've still made fewer changes than anyone, and on average, our first change is later than pretty much anyone as well. And before the game at the weekend, we'd had one goal and one assist from substitutions in the entire season. Made the changes a bit earlier in that game. Keenan had a bit longer to have a go of it. We've ended up with Keenan getting an assist, two goals for Trezeguet. And Trez was involved in the build-up to one of the other goals as well, and would have got a goal-creating action if you remember those from last week. I feel like it's like
CBBS or bite size, you know, GCSE bite size, where we're trying to revise our jargon from last week.
Yeah, I wasn't listening last week to you, AJ. Sorry,
and you're not listening now either. So I think there's definitely a case that Smith should have been making changes earlier. We've talked a little bit about this issue with getting in behind the fullbacks of Liverpool. And actually, if you watch the Madrid game in the week, they did it really effectively. And I read an interesting piece on that. And one of the things that it said was when Madrid have got the ball, and usually they've been all season, they've been doing this, but it was particularly effective against Liverpool. They've been pushing Casemiro, who's typically the holding midfield, but higher up. And then Modric and Kroos sit a little bit deeper, and they've got time and space then to find a pass. And that was helping them get in behind the Liverpool fullbacks. And I think that's similar. And a lot of the comments, interestingly, on this article were saying, oh, this is just like against the Villa. So it's very unusual for us to get compared favourably to Real Madrid. And I think that's true. That is what happened a lot for slightly different reasons, because they didn't have Mane, their press wasn't so effective, and our midfielders had a bit more time and space to play those balls in. And they had that very aggressive high line. And I think the other challenge that Liverpool have got with that now is without that stable centre-back pairing, actually, when Trent or Robertson push on, there's a lot more jeopardy there than if you've got Van Dijk. I know he was in the side when we thrashed them, which we always like to remind people of, but there is a lot more jeopardy in there because those partnerships at the back are not as strong. And two of Madrid's three goals came from balls over the top. They targeted Trent repeatedly, and granted, we don't have Modric and Kroos to pick there. I mean, that first goal, the pass that Kroos picked there was ridiculous, like eye of the needle stuff. But nonetheless, it was still effectively a ball over the top in between Phillips and Trent Alexander-Arnold, and they couldn't deal with it. So with that in mind, it'd be harsh on Trezeguet, given the impact he had coming on. I would be very tempted to play Keenan up front to occupy those centre-halves and have Ollie out on the left, to capitalise on that issue that Liverpool have in that right-back channel between the right-back and the centre-half, because I think Ollie's going to make some great runs in there that will cause them problems all night long. Of course, assuming Jack's not going to play, which I don't think he will for the foreseeable future now, because his eyes will primarily be on the Euros, unfortunately. So, yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing. I don't think Dino will do that. I think Ollie will start up front, and he'll probably start Trez on the left. But actually, for all his abilities, I don't see Trez as a winger that has a habit of running in behind. And that's where the real danger is for Liverpool. So I would be tempted to change things up in that way, but I'm not sure whether Dean will do it.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would prefer a 4-4-2, but then are you exposing yourself in midfield? You know, midfield has been a problem area these last 8-9 weeks. McGinn played further forward as a number 10, which I thought early on looked like it was a good idea, and he was getting into good positions. But I think McGinn was lacking a bit of quality and maybe some movement ahead of him as well, which didn't help. So I don't know if he'll play Louise and McGinn or play Sanson, McGinn, Sanson, Louise. I don't know. I'd be interested to see what he does there. But you know, you talk about Kroos and Modric. Obviously, we don't have that kind of quality in midfield at this present time. Carl, how would you shape the midfield, do you think, against Liverpool? And also, I want to just pick on Dougie Louise as well. A player, you know, I absolutely love and has been fantastic for us. Since the turn of last year, coming back from COVID, and then early part of this year, this season, but really is in a bad patch of form really now, isn't he? And I think he wasn't at his best again against Fulham. Do you think maybe someone like Nakamba comes in? I mean, what do you think of the midfield? How would you approach the game?
Well, I'm kind of with you, and I think I'd play a 4-4-2. It does leave us open in the middle of the park, but then I suppose that's when you need to look at the decision between Nakamba and Louise. Louise hasn't been great for half a dozen games, maybe more. But he's young, and you know this happens, doesn't it, to young players? They have bad patches of form, but he's still a very good player. But I think I'd probably play Nakamba in there and McGinn. As I'm saying it, I'm having some nightmares about them running through the middle of the pitch, just straight at Konsa and Mings. But I think why not? Why not go 4-4-2? Cause them problems at the back. I don't think we're going to grind out a 0-0 against them, and so we need to just consider how we're going to our best opportunities to score goals. And I like AJ's idea, but I don't think Dean Smith will do that at all. He's gonna play Watkins up front, and whether that I don't think he's gonna play 4-4-2 either. but I'm kind of just saying what I would do, I suppose. We all know what the team's gonna look like without Jack in it. Trezzi's gonna come in on the left. Traore's gonna be on the right. Watkins is gonna play up front. Midfield, he might bring Ramsey in for Song Song. And I think he'll stick with Louise and McGinn.
You just wanted to say Son Son, didn't you? I knew. You were just waiting for that, weren't you?
Yep.
I think we've got to have the three midfielders in the middle. I mean, for all Liverpool's struggles here and there this season, they're still going to have most of the ball. They've averaged 67% possession this year in all of their games. They've completed 17,000 passes this year. We've only completed 9,500. They're going to have a lot of the ball. They're going to move it around the midfield. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean we only had 30% of the ball in the game when we won them when we beat them 7-2. So possession isn't the only stat, but it feels very risky to me to have two men in the middle of the park, and to Sam's observation earlier. I think that does perhaps invite Thiago to have one of his better games in a Liverpool.
Is it not comparable to the Leeds game? Can we not do a number on them like we did against Leeds? You know, we knew Leeds were going to have a lot of the ball. We knew they were going to create a lot of chances. Play Nakamba in there, break it up. I don't know. Is that something you can do? Is it a comparable game?
I think so.
I think Nakamba for me, Or Ramsey, either one, for the energy and for their abilities off the ball, I think should have a shout. Part of me is thinking go old school 4-4-2, get some snow on it, get Davis up front.
Yeah. I'm with you, Omar. I'll get some snow on it, get it in the mixer.
I think a bit of Mike Bassett 4-4-2. You know, why not do a Burnley on them? Maybe, you know, that kind of style. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. But yeah, I think you're right. Smith won't change. He loves that formation, and he's one of these managers that, you know, Carl mentioned earlier about Klopp and having belief in what they're doing. And I think Smith's one of those people. He has belief in what he's trying to do and the way he's trying to play. Yes, he hasn't worked out in these last 8 or 9 games, but you're missing someone like Jack, then obviously it's going to have a massive impact, especially as a team like Aston Villa, you know, you see, you know, talk about Mane missing, you know, and Liverpool are stacked full of world-class players, but even they miss someone like him. So if we're missing Jack, it's obviously a big deal. I do wonder, Sam, about Jack, though, and Asia talked about it just a minute ago about saving him for the Euros and having one eye on that. I mean, there were some rumours last week that, Jack and Sancho could miss out for Lingard in the Euros. And then apparently I was watching BT Sport, and it might have been Sky Sports, I can't remember, and they were saying those rumours were quashed by the FA. They put the feelers out there that Jack's very much in consideration. It's almost become like a golden boy for England and one of these players that people talk about that the FA has an influence over. Do you think there's a concern there? Do you think there's a risk there that he doesn't play, he doesn't get in the Euros?
I do. I think one of the issues around him not playing, if he, like AJ said, if he doesn't play for the foreseeable, I think he's just giving Southgate the excuse he needs not to pick him. You know, I think he needs to come back soon. He needs a few games and a few decent performances under his belt. And I think that he'll be acutely aware of that. So unless there's something more fishy going on, then, you know, I think he will know that the sooner he's in a Villa shirt and doing the business on the pitch, the better it is for his England prospects. Which I guess makes it all the more frustrating and mystifying. I don't think that he'll be sitting there saying, I need to get myself absolutely right. And even if it's only for the last couple of games, then, you know, that's my best route into the England squad. I think that's the way to not get picked, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's going to want to run a games, but does he need 10 games to make sure he's in? I don't think he does. And, you know, I think as long as he's sort of played 5, 6, 7 games, I think that's what he'll be wanting to do, be as fit as possible, come back, firing on all cylinders and make himself unpickable. Because he's already in the situation. If we went to the Euros now and we lacked creativity and Southgate hadn't taken Grealish, like, that is the end of Southgate. It's as simple as that. Like, people in the country have seen enough of him for Villa and in England shirt to know that he's got something that no other player in the squad can offer. So, I think if he's fit, he has to take him. But I don't think he needs to play 10 games to prove his fitness.
Well, when's he got a name? Yeah. When's he actually named the 22 or 25, however many it's going to be?
I don't know. They normally go for a big number and then whistle it down, don't they?
No idea.
I've no idea. But I imagine it'd be towards the end of the season.
Well, there's talk about it being a 25, isn't there? Because of COVID and stuff, that they're actually allowed to. And if so, then everyone's saying, well, that kind of saves Southgate a few difficult conversations. I also think that if you believe what Southgate's kind of saying to the press, the players who aren't going to be taken already know, or they have a good idea. You know, he's managing their expectations. And, if the situation is that Jack's unlikely to go, I think Jack will know by now.
No. Did anyone see Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher's thing on Sky Sports where they're both picked their squad? So they both picked their squads and they all agreed on 20 players that had to go in. And Jack was one of them. And they both said he has to go without question. And they both talked about that Belgium match and how important that game was for Jack Grealish, because I think not only, you know, Villa fans obviously knew what he was about, but I think then the nation saw what he was about against playing against one of the best teams in the world and doing what he did at that game. So I think there will be a massive uproar if he wasn't taken. And I do think most fans and most pundits are expecting him to be of the 23 that's going to be taken. You know, there's always going to be 19, 20 that are pretty much shoo-ins. And I think he's one of them at this present time. But I mean, if he doesn't go, I don't know how you guys feel, but
I'm going to riot if he doesn't win.
I'm already
going to riot if he doesn't win PFA Player of the Season.
So Lingard's getting that, mate.
God. But I mean, that's the, if you look at it, I mean, Lingard, yes, I mean, he's been in the England squad before, he's performed before, but he's been poor for about 2 or 3 years now. And he's had a great spell of 8, 9 games. And suddenly, that's it, he's back in the England squad. Whereas Jack has had to do it consistently for 2 seasons before he's even, you know, got in the England squad or got near the England squad. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not sure what that's about. But, I mean, if Jack doesn't get in, then I honestly, and this is me speaking seriously, as a massive England fan, I just won't feel the same way about the Euros and won't feel the same way about supporting England during the Euros as well. Right, let's move on then. Before we talk predictions and memories, let's just talk about a couple of bits of Villa news that we've had over the last couple of weeks. Firstly, Konsa's new contract. Rumours that Spurs were interested and a lot of teams were circling around. I'd heard rumours actually this contract had been on the table for a while and Konsa hadn't signed it, so I was getting a bit worried. But great to see that Konsa signed and he's committed his future, or whatever that means, because, you know, let's be honest, football's not like that. It's not like he's actually going to see this contract out or anything like that. But he's at least committed for the next year or two. How important do you think that is, AJ, as a signal of intent for Aston Villa?
Well, it's massive from the point of view of him as a player and an individual. We've talked a lot already about, you know, he's on the verge of the England squad and he's clearly an excellent defender. He reads the game brilliantly and I think will only get better. But I think it also speaks to the kind of wider plan that the owners have in place of securing their best assets. And, you know, I think they're realistic that offers will come in for players and you will have to at times accept those offers. But if you've got them tied down to long deals, then you're going to make money. And one of the problems we've had and one of the reasons why our net spend has been so high over the last couple of years is because none of the players that we've seen go out of the squad have been worth any money. So all of the money we've spent has pretty much gone straight on the net spend because we can't get rid of anyone. Whereas now you're even getting to the point where, you know, say some of the squad players who we probably would hope to improve on in the next season or 2 year, El Ghazis and Trezeguets and people like that, you would get a bit of money back for those players now. And then the key assets, Grealish and Konsa, and they're talking about trying to get cash to sign a new deal, even though we only signed him 12 months ago. You know, it makes sense because those additional wages are still going to be cheaper than having to go out and buy a replacement for those players. And it also mirrors what the strategy has been with their other sports teams in the US, the basketball teams and so on, where they've, you know, made sure they're tying up their key assets there to long deals as well. So it's obviously a well-tried and tested and thought-through strategy and not just a case of throwing money at players for the sake of it. They've thought about it from a long-term business point of view as well as a football performance point of view, I think.
I thought you were going to try and attempt the name of the basketball player then.
No, I couldn't remember the name of the
team.
I know his first name is Giannis. Antetokounmpo.
Yes, mate.
Konampo.
So as far as I got.
That's what, we should have that as a challenge, shouldn't we? Someone try and say that name properly. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Konamo. No, can't say it. No, sorry. Terrible.
I think they signed him up last year, and I think there's been another one this year that they've also signed up some young kids.
Omar, it's definitely not pronounced like that.
No, I know. I tried. Yeah, I tried. Yeah, at least it gave an effort. That's the main thing, isn't it? But yeah, that was terrible. Sorry about that. I might edit it out. No, I'll keep in. And the other bit of news, well, it's not news. It's completely out of left field. I saw today. I'm not really sure what to make of it. It's complete clickbait, I'm sure. Well, I know it is, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. So I've fallen for the trap.
Ugh.
I'm sorry. But apparently Villa's owners are thinking about getting Steven Gerrard in as a replacement for Dean Smith. What the hell is that about? Surely that's the most ridiculous story I've ever heard.
God, I didn't read that.
Yeah.
Well, it was Football Insider 247 or whatever it is. I'm on another WhatsApp group, and actually I need to say something. I actually need to say something about that.
Kick him out, Omar.
Remember my Jesus joke that I said twice last week? Yeah. I need to say, that was Maltese John's joke. I stole it.
Mea culpa.
Can we get Maltese John on the show? Is that possible?
No. But yeah, so another guy on there was saying that he read some article in the Athletic, I think it was, and what's our managing director called?
Perslow.
Apparently, when he was at Liverpool, he was a bit of a fanboy of all like the big players, and he always wanted his sort of photos taken to them and get to know them and stuff. And I think when we was interested in Henri, there might have been a little bit of that in there. So he was a bit worried on the WhatsApp. But then I did have to remind him that this is an article in Football Insider 24/7, mate. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Nah, it's probably some 18-year-old kid on an internship writing the article. So
I was just going to say, one thing I would say is I wouldn't be surprised if, given the long-term thinking of the owners of the club, that they are keeping tabs on a number of young managers with a view to, if and when it's required, making changes. But I certainly don't think they'd be doing that in the short term, because surely Dean Smith has delivered on every objective they've set him so far. So why would they even consider a change? But they will be making plans, because that's the kind of guys that they are.
Yeah, a Villa source told them that his future isn't safe, though. And that's why we're looking strongly at Gerrard at the moment. So,
well, I mean, it's quite possible that they're, you know, they've looked at the change in the form since Christmas, And they've thought that another boss could be getting more out of the squad, given the investment. It's possible that they think that. I know that there are many people on the pod now and who do the post-match pod who probably vehemently disagree with it. I can see why they might be thinking, hang on a minute, are there other names out there who could be doing more with this group of players? They're entitled to think it. They've put enough money into the club.
If they're thinking that, though, that... Steve Gerrard is not top of the list, given he's done very well at Rangers, but, you know, it's Rangers, isn't it?
I wouldn't necessarily say that Gerrard has shown enough at Rangers to demonstrate that he can do any more than Smith. I think that's fair. But let's say we get to Christmas next year. Let's say there's been a big investment over the summer and we're getting similar sorts of results to our post-Christmas form. Can you see them having a bit of an itchy trigger finger? Because I can.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But I mean, at the same time, there's not to say that we will be the same post-Christmas. Because if there is further investment, this team, remember, is 18 months old. Let's be honest. It's basically been built from scratch. So with further investment, who's to say where we'll be? Smith's already shown that he can do it with these players. And yes, there's been a lot of investment, but it was much needed investment. We needed to get 40-odd players last season and another 4 or 5 players this season just to compete, really, more than anything else. And we have overachieved, I think. So, you know, who's to say we won't overachieve next season? But I do think these owners are ambitious. So it's not about loyalty. Yeah, they want to keep a bit of stability at the club. And I think that's the way that they think. But at the same time, results are the most important thing in football. And that's all that matters. We've seen it time and time again. So... No reason why not. But let's move on then. Let's get your predictions and then talk about some of our favourite memories to finish off. AJ, prediction?
Oh, I don't know. I don't fancy it. I think we're going to lose 2-0.
Sam?
1-1.
1-1. I'd probably go for 1-1. I think that's what I'm thinking. That's me being ultra, ultra positive as well. I can't see anything apart from a loss.
Keenan Davis, Salah penalty for them.
Right. Okay.
Probably a controversial VAR one.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. With Liverpool fans think they've been unfairly treated with VAR, so do Villa fans. So I'm sure there'll be one or two of them in the game. Carl, your prediction, please, mate.
Difficult one, this. 27-2.
You've learned from last game. Who's?
Yeah, I can see them snatching a couple of goals, to be honest.
Do you think they'll go 2-0 up and we'll come back and win 27-2?
No, their two are going to be very late goals. Just
consolation
goals.
Who are the scorers, mate?
Watkins get an hat trick, and then Trezeguet scores the other 23, and Salah scores an OJ. But Salah he makes up for it a little bit by he scores their two goals as well late on, both in injury time.
So fancy football boys would be happy, and girls.
Yeah.
So
Trez in your team.
Get Trez in your team. Yeah, definitely. Triple captain.
Captain. Yeah. Captain Trez. Yeah.
Right, thanks, boys. Right, let's move on. Lastly, memories of Liverpool. Like I said, I don't actually have any fond memories of Liverpool. I'm trying to think of the games I've been to. I've never been to Anfield, so they've all been at home. I went to the game in Martin O'Neill's second season where it was all, everyone was really hopeful and thinking we were going to go on this massive spending spree, and we ended up buying Marlon Harewood and Nigel Iheanacho as our first two signings. And it was still a summer's day, and Gerrard scored a freak. I think Barry scored a pen. We might have had, I think Larson scored an own goal, and then Gerrard scored that free kick at the right at the end of the game. And apart from that, I can't think of too many other games where we've done anything. I think we've lost every single game. 6-0 springs to mind. We've beaten them obviously at home a couple of times, but I think a Downing scored one, obviously the 7-2, but I didn't go to those games. So you boys got anything for me?
What about the semi-final, Omar? The semi-final?
Yeah, you know what?
Cup semi-final at Wembley.
You know what, the semi-final? Semi-final.
Jack Grealish is coming out party.
I had a ticket, but I was already booked a holiday to Egypt and I couldn't go. So I actually didn't get to see the semi-final live. I had to watch it in a sports bar in Egypt.
Oh, yeah. A nice link to the old Gerrard story as well, because of the old fucked up Gerrard's birthday entertainment. But then, of course, we got absolutely hammered in the final and didn't even turn up. That does put a bit of a sour note on it. But the day itself was a great day out and a brilliant performance. And Grealish was immense, wasn't he?
He was brilliant.
Absolutely incredible. Another example of him playing in a 10 role and being brilliant, by the way, which I've...
Even Charles and Dugby played well that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't happen very often.
I remember a couple of years... No, it's more than a couple of years ago now. We're all getting old. 2014... We raced into a 2-0 lead. Agbon Lahore was absolutely unbelievable. I think Gabby might have scored, or Vyman. 2-0, cruising. And then they pegged us back to 2-2 in the second half. That was under Lambert, I think. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It was the, of course, the one with Benteke and Vyman as well, where we won at Anfield. Yeah, that was a good one, although I wasn't there. I've never been to Anfield
either. Back heel.
Yeah, that was a great game. Yeah.
I've been to Anfield once. We lost 3-1. We lost 3-1. Gabby scored. It was a very non-memorable game.
That was when Digital Cissé scored.
So, well, that's a good collection of memories we've had this week.
I was dressed as a Mexican, right? It was the last game of the season. And fancy dressed as a Mexican. And I had a few Liverpool fan mates who said they were going to meet me at a pub called The Cabbage, right? And anyway, I couldn't find it. So I'm dressed as a Mexican. So I thought, I'll go and have a chat with a friendly Liverpoolian Bobby on the beat. So I said to him, excuse me, mate. I'm looking for a pub called The Cabbage, where my mates are. And he went, you're not going to The Cabbage, mate. I said, well, I am. My mate's there. He goes, you are not going to The Cabbage. And you know what? I'm not going to The Cabbage. And I'm like, I wasn't inviting you, mate. What the hell is this? So it was just the strangest conversation I've ever had with a copper anyway. Anyway, I never got to go to The Cabbage and we lost 2-0. And Cissé, do you remember him? Lord of the Manor of whatever. Yeah, he scored and we were crap that day under David O'Leary. Anyway, edit that out, Omar. See you later.
I was expecting a big, like,
leave the accent in.
Yeah, leave the accent in. I was expecting some sort of amazing finish to that story.
No, that's it.
I thought it was going to be something.
Maybe it was like a Mexican drug dealer's bar or something like that, and he didn't want you to go because the Mexican drugs gangs.
Yeah, what did the Mexican outfit have to do with anything there?
No, it's just you go. Well, we went fancy dressed to Bolton that time, remember? Last game of the season.
No, I get the last game of the season fancy dress sort of thing, but why was that important to that story?
Well, I think it's what made the policeman think that, you know, Mexicans aren't welcome at The Cabbage. That's all I can put it down to.
Anyone know
institutional racism?
Right, this whole segment needs to go, Omar.
Some of it.
I'm keeping it all in. It's going all in. No worries.
No, don't.
It's going all in. No, I can't take your Liverpool accent out. No way. Has to stay in. I did have the other memory I have of the Liverpool game was actually the same game. Was at New Street Station. And was all the Liverpool young lads, must have been all about 15, 16 years old, all of them absolutely trashed WH Smith and nicked about half of WH Smith. And I thought, well, you're living right up to stereotype. But that is literally the only memory I have of Liverpool games, which is not a good memory.
Just got loads of magazines and that.
Yeah.
I'll do a quick Megs Watch because we've had some people joining in on the old Megs Watch on Twitter now. It's a popular feature, mate. Don't want to miss out on it. But I'm furious about our Megs situation, I've got to say. It goes from bad to worse. Another game with no Megs from us, and we've only had one Megs in the last six games.
Smith out.
Only three Megs in the last 14. We're really struggling on the Megs, and someone needs to pull out a Megs otherwise.
Could you check Rangers Megs stuff just to see how Gerrard gets a Meg?
I'll have a look for next week. Liverpool are pretty average Megsers. So they've got 20 Megs for the season. Top Megser is Mane with 5. So another reason they can't drop him, because he's their key Megser. But also quite pleasing is the pattern of Megs in their previous 5 games, where they've gone 0-1, 0-1, 0. So we're hoping for a 1 to continue that
binary
Megs theme for Liverpool. So keep an eye out for the Megs. I just really want, one, even 2 from us. Imagine if we had 2 Megs in a game.
I mean, I know Megs was already quite niche, but now we're looking out for binary. Megs.
Megs.
That is a whole
Megs sequences. Megs sequences. That's what it's all about.
Generally, I've had people DMing me and messaging me through the game. Talking about Megs because of the Megs Watch. So it is definitely a popular feature. Mm. I mean, granted, it was about 4 people, but still, if we keep this going, it could be 8 next week, could be 12 the week after, by the end of the season, it could be maybe 17, 18, maybe, really high numbers.
Well, if each of those tell a friend, Omar, and then they tell a friend, and then they tell a friend.
They'll be doing them on the other clubs' podcasts, won't they? They'll be, That copper will be ringing up and going, hey, Villa, crap at the Megs,
Fuck.
The thing is, it's a bit like when we lose a game and, people don't want to talk about it so much because we're so bad at Megs, it's not really caught fire. There's a bit of interest from, the hardcore Megs watchers out there. But once we start pulling a few Megs and start moving up the Megs League, that's when we're going to get the engagement on it, Omar.
Do you think it'll be added to the fantasy football point system? Megs Watch. I think, Megs, it should be, shouldn't it?
I'd have it in there.
I'd go further than that and say, remember when they used to give a European place to the team who committed the least fouls? Yeah. Megs European place.
I'm against that because there's a good chance that Leeds would get it. That's the last thing.
Fair enough.
A point. A point, Gary Megson now.
That is a terrible joke and I'm keeping it in the pod. That is a terrible joke.
Please don't, Omar.
I thought it was all right.
this episode is going to be so hard to edit.
Oh, God.
But
no, thanks, it's easy. Boys. If I said it, cutting room floor.
Yeah, your whole segment. It was a shame Sam couldn't join us today, but what can you do? He's busy. All right. Anyway. Upbeat pod as ever. Well, not really as ever, because normally we're quite serious about things. So I hope you enjoyed that. Thanks to the boys, as always, for some excellent analysis and excellent insight into the Liverpool game that's coming up. Megs Watch was an absolute joy. Probably the best Megs Watch we've had this season, I think, so far. So I might clip that and put it on Twitter, I think. Well, so watch out for that. But thanks again to the boys. Thanks for listening. Usual spiel, please do follow and subscribe to our pod on whatever podcast platform you're on. Follow us on Twitter, where we pretty much do all our sort of promotion work and interaction with our fans. And the username is @VillaPodcast, all one word. And we'll be back on Sunday probably for a post-match review with a lockdown lowdown with Chazzy and Jugsy. Thanks to the boys again. Thanks for listening. And up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
I love it. Mainu bahut changa lagda.